Hello and welcome to Life is Like a Detective Novel, where I discuss how the human mind has a natural desire to solve the mystery of life. My name is Bailey Alexander, and through these stories and interviews in my latest book, called Personal Legends of Piemonte, we discover how 12 Northern Italians fulfilled their destiny, how they figured it out, by letting life unfold, or simply celebrating the treasure beneath their feet, and sometimes by rearranging the details until the product is perfect. And Piemonte produces so very many of Italy's finest products. I lived in Piemonte for 7 years, and eventually it began to feel like a pilgrimage, not necessarily one in search of penance or a blessing, but it became known that I was there to learn some very key life lessons, ones that I could take to my home here on Lake Garda in northern Italy. Piemonte is located in the northwest region of Italy, nestled up against the French, Swiss, and Italian Alps. The Piemontese are formed by the mountains. They're tough and industrious, and they're also worth reading about. It's a pristine place, and I used to think it was a secret that needed to be told, but it would appear the secret is getting out through books and films, and mine called Personal Legends of Piemonte, where I interview wine and cheesemakers, herbalists, a famous chef, a bar owner, a teacher, a bureaucrat, and a car mechanic named Luigi. Today, we meet Daniele from Arredi di Chiappione. His winery sits at the heart of Barbera wine country. And today, I give you a Cinderella story. It's kind of like another way to explain how mild everything tastes in Italy. For example, I grew up in Seattle and I used to go to the first Starbucks, located down at the Pike Place Market. And the cappuccino was great until I moved to Rome, where the cappuccini tastes like milkshakes. When I used to go back to my former home in Seattle and go to that same Starbucks, the coffee tasted bitter. Not that it was, just in comparison to Italy's coffee. And when I lived in Paris for many years, where the wine is wonderful, one could argue the French make wine to taste, but the Italians make wine to drink. So hey, let's get to chapter 9, where it's all about wine. And it's called Bacchus. Today we travel all the way back to the 13th century, to the southern hills of Monferrato, where a red grape named Barbera was born. Considered a dark horse without genetic relation to the glamorous grapes, Dolcetto and Nebbiolo. However, Barbera was precocious and packed with personality. If the grapes of Barolo and Barbaresco could be genetically promiscuous, Barbera was a single variety. She was also Piemontese and very stubborn. If forced to go it alone, she would use space to her advantage. Barbera rose rapidly. Her vibrance and adaptable character let her stand out from the crowd. She had promise and was nurtured with perseverance and love. When Barbera arrived on the international stage, she made quite a splash. She inspired interest, then affection, and naturally financial investment followed, and she delivered the sacred goods. Barbera now covers 30% of the land, amounting to no less than 52,000 hectares across Asti, Alba, Aosta, Monferrato, Puglia, and Sardinia. By the time Barbera was given a female gender, she was no longer considered a dark horse. Her story unfolds like Cinderella's, now living happily ever after. If it took Barbera a long time to conquer the world, it only took me a couple of months to find her. Unbeknownst to me, she was patiently waiting for an introduction in a nearby town called Bubbio. Loazzolo, where I lived, was taking its time opening a bar, which forced me to be promiscuous as well. Instantly, I became loyal to Mackie's Tavola Caldo. Massimiliano and his wife Chiara are the proprietors, and they're so likable I come back constantly. Massi could make any drink I desire, but today I'm in the mood for a glass of wine. When he recommends Barbera, synchronicity comes into play. A wine producer by the name of Daniela walks in while I'm drinking a glass from his cantina. Both he and his wine are so charming, I decide to follow them home. Daniela takes me to his winery, called Arredi di Chiappione Armando. It's located in the heart of Nizza Monferrato, where Barbera was born. As soon as we sit down, Daniela lifts his glass to say, "Wine is love." We're in his tasting room with floor-to-ceiling windows overlooking the family vineyards. The sun is setting, the wine is fine, and I'm so relaxed. I can't help but believe him. His grandfather, Armando, was born in 1908, and with his brother, Caesar, he expanded their land, one row at a time, year after year. Then Franco came along, and the baton was passed down to Daniele. If I perceive the Piemontese as less than sentimental, Daniele stands out. Perhaps it's the way he goes against the campanilismo and carefully cultivates relationships with various associations in neighboring towns to help spread the love. If cyclists only pass through the town of Loazzolo, they stop at Areta di Chiappione Armando's winery. Daniele works with his sister and father, who make me wonder why I don't stop by more often. They're gracious and inspire traffic, offering tours and wine tasting, surrounded by vineyards a few feet away outside the windows. When you're completely comfortable, which doesn't take long, a charcuterie plate arrives, or a spinach tort. You don't have to cue the sunset. It arrives each day. Nizza could be considered a kind of microcosm of all that is good in the world. Regarded the warmest part of Piemonte, its wine is ripest. Daniela's winery isn't the only destination. Under the moon over Monferrato, there are a dozen restaurants to choose from, most of them memorable. A dinner date in Nizza is distinct. It's where we spend New Year's Eve. And if I'm making a special dinner at home, I go to Vittorio and Loredana's butcher shop in the town center on Via Carlo Alberto. This historic agri-butcher shop offers prize-winning meat from the cattle at Blue Grasso di Carur Fair. From lamb to ox, the specialties include raw salami, ox salami, cacciatorini, tripe, meatballs, rolata farcita, and roast beef. Their meat is processed according to the ancient trade of the butcher, handed down from generation to generation. Outside along Via Carlo Alberto, the street has energy and people are noisy. When I enter, the clients become conspicuously quiet until it's their turn. They are Italian. There will be a discussion. Waiting, I look up at the painted ceilings with awards extending downward, dramatic swathes of fabric draped with honors inscribed in white on red satin and velour. People study the supply behind the glass, the same way Italians inspect labels before they buy the product. This leads to more questions with the proprietor. Then purchases are made. Absorbing the ambiance, the color of the meat is authentically red and soft. It generally takes 7 years of breeding, and the quality is superb. Even the aroma in the air is serious. Nizza is a destination for music festivals in summer, ice rinks in winter, and the town always has a horse in the Gran Palio di Asti, which is worthy of a mention. It's more than a horse race, and it's similar to the one in Siena, but it has more races, more horses, and a dramatic and colorful procession of 1,000 flag throwers and characters dressed in medieval dress. Held in September, several towns compete for the coveted Palio banner. I saw it once. It's chaotic and thrilling, and lasts about 90 seconds. Jockeys ride bareback and must complete 3 laps. The race has been run each year since the year 1275 and takes place in the triangular piazza in the center of Asti, the Piazza Alfieri, held every third Sunday in September. Campanilismo is on full display and time stops, existing today as it did in medieval times. Need I mention that Palio is equally as beautiful and exciting, if not as well known as the Palio in Siena? 5,000 seats are set up, and the party goes all night long. Outside the piazzas and the parties, foggy landscapes and vast undulating hills make up Monferrato. It's an appellation famous for its calcareous, clayey soils, giving laying wines both complexity and structure. Almost entirely built on hills, this offers a bewildering array of aspect and sun exposure. Umberto Eco was born nearby. His novels, full of subtle, multilingual references to literature and history. Italians love getting lost in the details. They have a word, dietrologia, meaning the facts behind the facts. Eco marvels at how language evolves while, since the time of Dante, the main language remains. It's a challenge to read Geoffrey Chaucer's Canterbury Tales, written in Middle English. I know because I studied it. But an Italian could read Dante and understand it perfectly. I've seen kids as little as 9 recite Dante after dinner. They retain dialects like the landscape of Monferrato retains its distinct beauty. The traditional technique of wine cultivation remains a constant, dating all the way back to the 13th century, when Barbara was born. There's an arc to Barbara's life. From her status as a dark horse, she's earned high prestige within the wine community and beyond. Barbara and the treasure beneath her feet offer universal value, selected for inclusion in UNESCO's World Heritage Center. Practically all of Piemonte is part of UNESCO. Another reason to agree, it's the secret that needs to be told. And I agree with Daniela. Wine is love. So hey, thank you so much for stopping by for a listen. I have a book signing for Personal Legends of Piemonte in Rome on April 10th at the Almost Corner Bookshop, and the book is in both English and Italian. The first half is in English, the second in Italian. So if you're getting ready to visit Italy, you can brush up on your Italian. And additional information can be found on my website at baileyalexander.com. Again, thanks so much for listening. Ciao for now. Arrivederci.